Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, good Tuesday afternoon to each and every one of you, wherever you might be out there in Stand in the Gap Today territory. We are delighted to have you there with us, no matter where you might be today. And on behalf of Sam Rohr and Dave Kistler, I'm Gary Dahl, and we thank you so very, very much for the pleasure of your company. We want to remind you that we are on this radio station at this time, every day, Monday through Friday, to talk about issues from the biblical and from the constitutional perspective. And so it's always a delight to have you there, but we would encourage you also to invite others to join us, because I fully believe that we deal with issues and will deal with issues on this program that you'll hear no other place. No other radio program talks about the things like we do, because we talk about them from the biblical perspective, the constitutional perspective, but there are three of us, Sam, Dave, and I, who are preachers. And you get three preachers talking about the same thing in agreement. That's a miracle, ladies and gentlemen. And so we have the opportunity to be together every day at this same time. Well, coming up in just 2 days from today is going to be the 2015 National Day of Prayer. The theme this year is Lord, Hear Our Cry. And, of course, the National Day of Prayer Task Force is really emphasizing the need for individuals corporately and individually to place their faith in the Lord to bring revival to our nation. And I am encouraging pastors all across the country to, number one, attend local National Day of Prayer events if you can, but also to have special prayer meetings in your church. I know the church that I pastor, the Faith Baptist Church of Altoona, is going to be having a special emphasis during our prayer meeting tomorrow night. It will be our National Day of Prayer emphasis. And then many of us here in Blair County, where I'm located, Blair County, Pennsylvania, will be going to the Blair County Courthouse to participate in the National Day of Prayer event out there. And so we encourage you to do this no matter where you might be. There are thousands of these events going on across the nation, and we invite you to be involved. And Sam, I am happy to report to our audience here today that you were quoted in the Washington Times with regard to the National Day of Prayer. Congratulations, my friend.
Well, thank you, Gary and Dave. And it's a wonderful thing. You know, sometimes the Washington Times has done a tremendous job of helping to put forward the truth. And they had a good article on the upcoming prayer event on Thursday with a fine list of people who will be there. And I had given them a quote where I had said that, prayer is not a means to get God on our side, but prayer is a means to align ourselves with God's purposes and His plan and His will. And Gary, I think, I'm glad they picked up on that particular one, because I think, you know, sometimes, we can pray out of desperation. Sometimes we can pray because we're wanting to get God, as I said, on our side. We're wanting Him to come along and put His stamp of approval on our efforts. And that's a tempting thing to do, but that's not what God wants to hear. He will answer prayer when people's hearts are right with Him. He will answer prayer when we are in alignment with His will, and we should always, at the end of every prayer, say, pray this, that whatever it is, Lord, Thy will be done. Because ultimately, we're a part of God's larger plan on this earth. He's got a plan for our nation. He's got a plan for this world. We are here as stewards. We're walking along trying to occupy and being Christ's ambassadors and soldiers of the cross for truth. But within that whole context, we're operating according to where God wants to go and what He wants to do. But He wants to hear from us in prayer, but He wants us to come on His terms, not ours.
Well, that's a very good point, and I really like that statement. I'm going to repeat it again, where you said prayer is not a means to get God on our side. Prayer is a means to align ourselves with God's purposes, plans, and will, and that's true. The more we pray, the more we will line up with God's will and God's way. Now, normally, In the past, presidents have issued proclamations in honor of the National Day of Prayer. And last year, President Obama issued what I call a rather weak proclamation, in which he said, and I quote, "Tradition of religious liberty, which protects America's rights to pray and to practice our faiths as we see fit, is what we should do," end quote. Now, Dave Kistler, I'm glad that he made that proclamation, but it seems to be kind of weak. I mean, you know, he talks about our liberty and our right to pray, but doesn't say too much about the effect of prayer.
Well, Gary, you know, we need to underscore here the fact that the National Day of Prayer was held for decades in the White House, and not until this president became president was the National Day of Prayer commemoration, the annual event, moved out of the White House and now has to be held in the Cannon Office Building. And not one time, Gary, in his presidency has the president showed up to that event. If you'll remember during the Reagan years, the Bush years, those men always went to this event. It was central on their calendar. It was important to them. And I think, Gary, if I'm not mistaken, a time or two, the president has refused even to send what is called a paper declaration. And that's what you've read from last year. It's a paper statement where he just sends it over, and it's typically read. Whatever the president has said is read there in that room in the Cannon Office Building. And last year I was there. I mean, I sit in the room, and I remember Dr. Dobson saying, "We have not yet received an official statement from the White House for this year's National Day of Prayer." And finally, before the event was actually over, there was what appeared to be that very hastily written statement sent over. So, you know, so Gary, not only is he not talking about the effect of prayer, but it just doesn't seem to be something that's major in his focus. And you couple that with the fact that Christianity is under attack around the globe, and the president feels no compulsion whatsoever to really say much about it. Gary, that should say, and that should speak volumes about where his priorities lie.
Well, I don't know if he has issued any proclamation as of yet, has he, Sam? I mean, I know that in years gone by, the president's proclamation was usually in print days in advance. And of course, Dave, you're right. You know, that one from last year was very late in coming. But Sam, do you know, has he issued a proclamation yet?
Well, I haven't seen it. And I would have to say that likely by the fact that no one's seen it, we haven't seen it, that it may be really late again. But I want to underscore what Dave's saying. Historically, our presidents have made it a top order of priority. In any event, it is low priority for the president. And there are other things that outrank it significantly. And of course, I look and I say, you know, does God see that? I mean, let's face it, we are praying to the God of heaven. That's what these prayers should be going towards. And there are such things as national prayers. It does make a difference what our national civic leaders do, as well as our pastors. And this is a low priority for this president, unfortunately.
Well, it is, unfortunately. And however, those of us who know the Lord and love the Lord ought to do what we can to gather together with others of like precious faith and ask God to work effectively as a result of this National Day of Prayer this year. We need prayer in America like never before. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there are a lot of issues for us to deal with today. We're going to get into them when we return. Until then, in a few minutes, stand by. We're right back, right after this. Don't go away.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. This month, Pennsylvania Family Institute's Independence Law Center is bringing on a second constitutional attorney, Jeremy Samick is his name, to augment our efforts to defend the sanctity of life, the institution of marriage and the family, and religious freedom. Now, we're not adding staff just to grow larger, far from it, but because, quite frankly, the threats to liberty and the requests for help from churches, pastors, individuals, and businesses dealing with these challenges are growing and becoming overwhelming. Now, would you consider a tax-deductible gift today to help us meet this growing need? We offer our legal services without cost, but we can only do so with your help.
The Pennsylvania Family Institute. Protect the family. Preserve the future. We depend on your prayers and financial support. To donate, log on to pafamily.org or call us at 1-800-FAMILY-1.
Freedom is not a gift bestowed upon us by other men, but a right that belongs to us by the laws of God and nature. A quote from Benjamin Franklin. In 1778, George Washington said in Valley Forge, "If having pleased the Almighty Ruler of the universe to defend the cause of the United States, and finally to raise up a powerful friend among the princes of the earth, to establish our liberty and dependence upon a lasting foundation, it becomes us to set apart a day of gratefully acknowledging the divine goodness and celebrating the important event which we owe to his divine interposition."
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
May 5th, 1988, President Ronald Reagan signed an act of Congress designating the first Thursday in May as a National Day of Prayer. This has always been part of American life. Indeed, President Washington declared a National Day of Prayer during his first year in office. President Madison did during the War of 1812, Lincoln during the Civil War, and President Woodrow Wilson during World War I. It was President Harry S. Truman, though, who made it an annual event, saying, "In times of national crises, when we are striving to strengthen the foundations of peace, we stand in special need of divine support."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
"If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land." 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and along with Dave Kistler and Sam Rohr, I'm Gary Dull. Well, fellas, we have one more candidate in the GOP running for the presidency of the United States of America. Mr. Michael Huckabee announced today that he was going to run. Of course, some of us have suspected it. And this is quite interesting, Sam, in that Mike is a friend of the American Pastors Network.
Well, he is. And, you know, Mike is an individual. I mean, a lot of the country knows him, obviously, from his position at Fox News or was there. But Mike's also run for president before. He was a governor of the state of Arkansas. He is a Baptist preacher. It's interesting that God called him, and we talked to him personally, God called him into the pulpit first and then called him to run for office. Mike's entry brings someone in already into a race, as we've been talking about these others who have stepped forward. It's becoming an increasingly cluttered, if you put it that way, or full, perhaps, race. But there are a number I think, good individuals. I think Mike brings to it a perspective and experience that will make him formidable. Mike could do a very good job. There's a lot of thinning out to be done, as well as this, as the pack continues to unfold, because it's certainly growing almost by the day.
Well, it is. And, of course, Dave, you heard his announcement, did you not?
Gary, I did. In fact, it was really outstanding. And I just want to say this, and then I'll share a few excerpts from what he had to say in his announcement speech. But, you know, Mike Huckabee kind of brings together both components of what we view as a critical element of the American Pastors Network. And that's this ministers together concept, where we try to convey not only our preachers in the pulpit, ministers of God, but those that serve in elected office are as well. And Mike has done both. And so he is uniquely qualified and brings a very unique perspective to the table as a president. Presidential contender. But gentlemen, he made his announcement in Hope, Arkansas. The governor there, Asa Hutchinson, spoke, and then Mike's wife spoke, and she did a really outstanding job. Just a real down home, very interesting lady. Talked about her cancer that she had back, I think, in her mid to early 20s. She and Mike thought that they would not be able to have children because of that cancer. Of course, they've ultimately been able to have three, and are expecting now their fifth grandchild. She talked about that. Mike talked about that. But then Mike came to the podium and did a phenomenal job. He addressed this gentleman, which I thought was very, very important. He talked about the Supreme Court and what is before the court right now, this redefinition potentially of marriage. And Mike made this statement. This is a direct quote. The Supreme Court is not the supreme being. He said they, the Supreme Court, can never alter God's definition of marriage, which I thought was an interesting thing to include in his announcement speech. It means it's a passionate thing to him and should be to any American. He went on and talked about the limited nature of government as the Constitution intended it to be, and kind of a Reagan-esque statement, very humorous. He said government is like the Roach Motel. Politicians go in, but they never come out. And I thought that was a very interesting statement. And then he talked about education and very, very unequivocally said that we need to disband the Department of Education. He said there's no need for it. Education should be exercised on the local level. And he said the Department of Education is flunked and it needs to be expelled. And that was his exact words. So, Gary, it was a very, very interesting and, to be honest with you, very thorough announcement for president.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear him announce that he's running. Sam, you know, of course, the last time that he ran, he stayed in there, I guess he was there pretty close to the convention, wasn't he? I mean, he didn't have too much of a chance. Mm-hmm. I guess if I recall, he won the Iowa caucus, if I recall correct. And then he went on from there. But what do you think this time around? He's been on Fox News ever since, and he's out there with his positions on various issues and so forth and so on. Do you think he has a better chance this time? And amongst the others who are running, where would you put him today?
Well, Gary, I think that he is better known. I think that certainly those who have been following him on Fox would have a much better deeper understanding of the breadth of his views and his convictions. I think all of that is good. Although there's something that's not clicking in some respects, because even most of the polls are showing that that among Republican voters, he's still in the single digits. Individuals like Ted Cruz and some others are ahead in these polls. Of course, do we know that those things can change? Yes, we do. But in reality, you know, the Republican primaries are going to come down to who can perhaps most effectively reach the evangelical conservative base. That's what the Republican primaries tend to be about. Who can speak to that group, because they play a very, very important role. And in that category, you have Ted Cruz, you have Mike Huckabee, you'll have I think Ben Carson, since he came in yesterday, will be appealing or trying to appeal to that same base. And so you're going to be hearing some straight out, very clear positions on things, and I think that, you know, Mike's position will be enhanced because of where he is, but for some reason something's not fully clicking. He's not as high as what I would think he would be after being on Fox for so long.
You know, in previous programs, and of course in the predecessor of this particular program that we had for years, Freedom Focus, we often talked about how the establishment Republican Party, at least it appears, as though they do not want to have a good, strong, conservative Christian candidate. Of course, Sam, we've seen that with you. I mean, you know, when you ran for the governorship, whenever you ran for the United States Senate, in my opinion, you were the best man running. But you just could not get the support of the establishment. And do you think that by virtue of the fact that Mike Huckabee has been a pastor, and then, of course, he was a successful governor for, what, something like 10 years. But do you think the very fact that he has been a pastor, he's a committed Christian, he's a committed conservative, do you think that that is a part of the reason why he can't just get the footage there that he should be having?
Well, I think that's partly because I think that applies, Gary, to any of the candidates who run as someone who has a higher authority, meaning God and the Constitution, than the leadership of the Republican Party. And so the establishment wants complete authority. They want you to bow down at their feet. It's just the way, unfortunately, it has become. So whether that be Mike or Ted or Ben or any of the others that are clearly non-establishment candidates, none of them, for that reason, will get a lot of any a comment at all positive. They're not going to get any help from the establishment. Now, the fact that that Mike is a pastor, I'm not so sure that that makes a whole lot of difference. I think it's more the fact that he has an allegiance that's not only, that's not first and foremost to the party. So it's going to affect a group of them, not just Mike in this case.
Dave, how can that be changed? In other words, you know, with the establishment being out there and really putting the cork in the bottle of those who are good, solid Christian conservatives, how can that be changed? I mean, it really needs to be changed if we are going to get the right kind of people in government. I mean, we've had personal experience as to how the establishment has put down the best candidates. How can that be changed across the nation?
Well, Gary, the American people have got to be heard from, and the GOP base has got to be heard from by the leadership in the party. And for the people to be heard and the base to be heard, I honestly believe this, man, the preachers of America have got to let their voice be heard. And I don't mean, you know, endorsing candidates, but I do mean this. I think it behooves every one of us who are preacher of the gospel and want to see America salvaged, not just salvaged, but saved and returned to her former greatness and her walk with God that we once had. It means from the pulpits of this country, preachers are going to have to declare God's expectation for leaders. And to be quite honest with you, men, and I'm not rejecting anyone, you know, in particular or promoting anyone else necessarily. I'm just saying this. There are some of the candidates that are going to be in that GOP field that do not meet God's qualification for leadership. And those would be most likely the very candidates that the GOP establishment would want to put their stamp of approval on. So if this is going to change, it's got to start in the pulpits of America.
So do you think it has come to the place, David, where pastors perhaps need to start speaking from the pulpit and using names as to who are the best leaders? I know we've talked about this before many, many times and probably will continue to do so. But if we've got to get the truth out, if we're going to get the truth out, do we have to put a name on that?
Well, Gary, I would say this. I think there's a time and a place, yes, where that's appropriate to mention this person is not qualified, and here's the reason why, and just say they don't meet God's expectation. And, you know, really, Gary, that probably should have started yesterday, if you know what I'm saying. We probably waited too long to address these issues, so I would say yes to that.
Well, these are some of the subjects and topics we're going to be talking about, ladies and gentlemen, as we get closer to the election. We need to pray that God will raise up the right individual to lead this nation back to truth. And, you know, maybe it has come to the time when pastors need to start endorsing certain candidates. That's a controversial subject that I think we'll be talking about more as time goes on. We're going to take a break. We will be back with more right after this. So don't go away. Stay tuned. This is Stand in the Gap Today.
Kings or Parliament could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and Lord of all the earth. They are not annexed to us by parchments and seals. They are created in us by the decrees of Providence, which established the law of our nature. They are born with us, exist with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives. A quote from John Dickinson, 1804.
News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. It's the sixth Republican in the 2016 presidential race, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee in his hometown, Hope.
When I hear our current president say he wants Christians to get off their high horse so we can make nice with radical jihadists, I wonder if he could watch a Western from the 50s and be able to figure out who the good guys and the bad guys really are.
He ran for president before in 2008. President Obama nominating a Marine General Joseph Dunford Jr. as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
He's one of our military's most highly regarded strategic thinkers. He's known and respected by our allies, by members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, and by colleagues across our government.
If confirmed, he'll replace Army General Martin Dempsey. He's stepping down after 4 years as Joint Chiefs Chairman. Fox News, we report.
Join me, Carla Dedessi, here every Friday from 8 until 9 for Your Family Matters. This is going to be an epic year, 2015, for Your Family Matters. We are going to continue to protect your family, your faith, while we are having fun. We're going to bring cutting-edge news to you, the current events, current resources and tools that are going to give you the best family ever. So strap on your seatbelt and join me for this wild ride in 2015 on Your Family Matters every Friday morning. Don't miss us.
You're listening to WFYL 1180, working for your liberty and things that matter. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's a delight to have you with us here this afternoon. And Sam, we ended the last segment sort of with a question on our minds. And when I asked that question, I thought, well, you know, maybe this is something that we can deal with later. And I'm sure we will deal with it later as we get closer to the election. But in light of what is out there today in the candidates, in light of what's going on in America today, where there is a departure from truth, we have an article that we may or may not get to it today in our stack of information on the responsibility that pastors have to play in the moral fiber of this particular nation of ours. But has it come time when pastors in the pulpit should endorse candidates for truth? who are standing for truth, Sam?
Gary, I believe that it has. Okay, now let me explain what I'm saying, because a lot of folks say, whoa, wait a minute, Pastor, don't you dare stand up and talk
That's
about it.
That's why I asked you, brother, because there are pastors out there asking that question.
I know that, and that's why I think it's such a pertinent discussion. But from this perspective, they will say, we shouldn't talk about issues such as civil government, which means certainly a candidate, because is that really our role as a pastor? Well, we'd say absolutely biblically, it is every bit as much of the role of what Scripture talks about as it talks about the family. So if you're not embarrassed about talking about the role of the father and the mother and the children, you'd better not be embarrassed about talking or think that it's wrong talking about the matters of civil government. And certainly, those are the people who serve in it, number one. Number two, there are some who would say, you dare not talk about that. Otherwise, the IRS is going to come right down on you. You're going to lose your 501c3 tax-exempt status, a major fear for most pastors. But frankly, the matter is, no one has lost their right to do so and their status. But beyond that, a pastor does not ever give up his First Amendment right to free speech. A pastor is every bit able, under the law, before God, to say, I intend to vote for so-and-so for judge or so-and-so for president, and let me tell you why I'm going to do so. Now, that is exactly what ought to be done. Now, if the pastor stands up and says, we are going to use our church buildings as a base of operation for the candidate, okay, according to the law, that should not be done. However, to encourage the people to be involved, to teach them why they should be involved, and to say, here's what God says, this is what God looks, I mean, frankly, Gary and Dave, we both know, I mean, back in the day when Israel selected a king, they went after Saul. Was there a problem in calling out and saying, for God to call out and say, hey, Saul's going to give you a lot of trouble, he may be tall, he may be good looking, but he's going to tax you to death. He's going to take your children. This is not going to be good. I mean, well, should the man of God in the pulpit not reiterate what God would say about a candidate? Absolutely, yes. So, Gary, the time has come. But the time has come for pastors not just to say, I'm going to vote for so-and-so because I think he's a nice guy, but it's to qualify the candidates biblically and then use the opportunity to teach the people how God evaluates a candidate and what God says is necessary for him to bless a nation who puts certain people in office. So that is where it is. So it's a big issue, but Gary, it's not as complicated as it has become.
You know, this is a big issue, and of course there are many people who are afraid to even talk about this issue. I'm talking about pastors and preachers being afraid to talk about this issue of endorsing a particular candidate over the pulpit. A lot of questions are coming to my mind here this afternoon. Dave, you've been a preacher for, 35, 40 years. Have you ever endorsed a particular candidate in your preaching over the pulpit?
Gary, I have never endorsed a candidate by name. I've never said, you know, this is the person I'm voting for. However, I'm not saying that there is not a time to do that. I agree with Sam completely. I think if a pastor stands up in the pulpit and says, look, I personally am going to vote for this individual and here's why, and then he lays out a biblical case why this person has God's stamp of approval on them. They're not in any obvious violation of scriptural principles or from a leadership standpoint. They are not devoid of the character and the qualities that God looks for in a leader. And then a pastor says, this is the person I'm going to vote for. Here's why. Then, yeah, I agree. I think that's exactly what needs to be done. We're certainly at a place where that should take place. But up until this point, Gary, I have not done that. However, I have many times from the pulpit tried to clearly lay out what the Bible says are the biblical qualifications for leaders and try to make it as clear as I possibly can that certain leaders are not qualified from God's perspective. And if they're not qualified from God's perspective, they shouldn't be viewed as being qualified from the Christian's perspective.
Well, you know, I agree with you. Many times over the years, I have I've preached so clearly that the people had no doubt as to who I was talking about, whether it's for or against. But Sam, we're coming up against a very interesting situation right now, particularly in the GOP. And that is the fact that we have a number of individuals who claim to be saved, and as far as we know, they are born again. They're Christians. They're conservatives. I mean, you know, there's four or five of them that we could name right now who are candidates. Some are yet to announce their candidacy, if they do, who are really, without a doubt, as far as we know, in line with biblical truth. So, you know, how do we approach a situation like that? I mean, you know, here you've got a number of Christians who are committed to biblical truth, who want to do what God wants them to do. How do we handle that as Christians and as pastors?
Well, Gary, you know, we handle that by walking through the process from the beginning, which then leads you to the ending. The beginning is something that we have never done. I mean, I wouldn't say never done. We generally don't do as a nation and as a people, and that is to start with the biblical qualification. If we were to just to begin there and to begin asking the questions relative to what ought to be from God's perspective, meaning, I mean, their knowledge of the fear of God, their knowledge of biblical principles, their knowledge of the purpose of government, their knowledge and ability to explain the purpose for the law, and what justice really means. We have a lot of discussion about justice these days after coming out of Baltimore, don't we? And I hear people talking about, I promise you justice. And you say, look and say, what kind of justice are you talking about? It's not the definition of God's justice. So those are the kind of things that if we were to begin think in those terms and ask questions in those terms, even the candidates who say they are Christians will tend to, I think, begin to thin themselves out. After all, we don't have to make a determination yet at this early point in the process of who we're going to vote for when the time comes. That's what this process is all about. But asking these questions and beginning to go down this road, I believe we'll see evidence of which candidates say one thing but perhaps do something else. But at least we have a debate that gets them on the right side of the equation where we're beginning to look from God's perspective. I wouldn't worry about picking somebody yet too early. But let's start talking about the qualifications, and I think they'll separate themselves out.
But that, you know, that's the point. I mean, you know, here we've got individuals who are claiming to be born-again people. And, you know, I'm not going to name those, of course. You know, Mike Huckabee is one of them, and we could go on. I just don't want to name those now. That's not the point. The point is, though, I believe that we are up against the most significant presidential election in our history up to this point. Now, if you've got the potential on the GOP side of having several who claim to be born again, we really do need to pray, number one, and use a lot of Holy Spirit discernment if we are going to vote for that right individual. And there is no doubt about it, but that right now, as we are approaching the National Day of Prayer, that should be pretty much a priority on our prayer list, should it not, Sam?
Well, Gary, it absolutely should. This is something that should be a matter of prayer. And ultimately, you know, from a practical perspective, it would be nice to believe that perhaps as we approach the primary time, when the time comes to vote in these various states, that perhaps there is in fact a self-thinning of the ranks, maybe where if there are several who perhaps could be biblically qualified, because there could be three or four that are biblically qualified, but then God gives us judgment to take a look at them and say, well, which one does the best job of expressing the truth? Which one has the best, perhaps, record over the past of demonstrating that they hold to the truth? These are the kind of things that work themselves out, but I would like to think that there would be a thinner rank when these primaries come so that, in fact, the votes of Christians and evangelical constitutionalists are not splintered so as to allow the establishment candidate to walk away with the win. But that's always a challenge that we have in our system of government, where we have ability to step in and exercise our votes. We need to pray for that.
Well, we need to pray for that. And one of the news items that I don't know that we'll get to today, I kind of doubt it right now, but you know, the American clergy have a great responsibility to play as it relates to the moral decay of our country and the moral fiber of our nation. And I think that in light of that, pastors need to stand up and speak out for truth. And sometimes that's going to involve what you say about a particular candidate. We'll be talking more about that as time goes on, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back with something else right after this. Don't go away.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. This month, Pennsylvania Family Institute's Independence Law Center is bringing on a second constitutional attorney, Jeremy Samick is his name, to augment our efforts to defend the sanctity of life, the institution of marriage and the family, and religious freedom. Now, we're not adding staff just to grow larger, far from it. But because, quite frankly, the threats to liberty and the requests for help from churches, pastors, individuals, and businesses dealing with these challenges are growing and becoming overwhelming. Now, would you consider a tax-deductible gift today to help us meet this growing need? We offer our legal services without cost, but we can only do so with your help.
The Pennsylvania Family Institute. Protect the family. Preserve the future. We depend on your prayers and financial support. To donate, log on to pafamily.org or call us at 1-800-FAMILY-1.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, 1776.
Young Winston struggled in school. He failed the entrance exam twice before entering Britain's military academy. His early success in politics gave way to midlife failure. And in the mind of the public, his career was ended. Of course, we all know Winston Churchill went on to become England's Prime Minister during World War II. But did you know that, after the war, voters tossed him out of office, despite his wartime leadership and popularity? This is Howard Butt Jr. of Laity Lodge. Churchill's career reminds us that early failure cannot predict future success. Neither can present success guarantee the future. The best thing, the only thing, is to do your best, be your best in each moment in the high calling of our daily work.
Learn more at thehighcalling.org.
Hi, this is Nancy Becker, the Recorder of Deeds in Montgomery County. I'd like to read a quote from Mark Twain. In the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man, and brave, and hated, and scorned. When his cause succeeds, the timid join him, and then it costs nothing to be a patriot.
You're listening to WFYL 1180, working for your liberty and things that matter. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The Resource Library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're hearing all across the nation today on the various news items, outlets, that the Islamic State terror group, ISIS, has claimed the responsibility or claimed that they were responsible for the Sunday's attack on a Texas cartoon contest where Muhammad was featured as a cartoon figure, I guess you could say. And, of course, this claim was made through one of their radio stations over in Syria. And as far as I know, it's the very first time that ISIS has taken credit for an attack on the United States soil. And in their announcement, they basically said, "We tell America that what is coming is more bitter and harder, and you will see from the soldiers of the caliphate what harms you." Now, David Kistler, that's a pretty strong statement. The fact of the matter is, ISIS is here, and I think we can expect more from them.
Well, Gary, I don't think there's any doubt, but what that is the truth. You know, we have been trying to sound the alarm on the program that preceded this one, that Islam is a threat to the United States of America. And I'm not calling it radical Islam is a threat. I'm saying Islam is a threat. This ideology that wants the implementation of Muslim Sharia law, Gary, is a threat to the Republic that is the United States of America. It is totally incompatible with a constitutional republic. And so now we've had the first attack. At least it's a claim. It's claimed by ISIS that they are the ones that perpetrated this act, or at least encouraged these gentlemen as homegrown terrorists to perpetrate this act down in Garland, Texas. Gary, what to me is absolutely stunning is that one of the two gentlemen who fired those initial shots, and thankfully both of them were killed by that Garland police officer, and that does speak a little bit to Texas justice. I mean, they are very well equipped down there in the state of Texas to deal with these kind of things, and thank God they are. But one of the two men who perpetrated this act is a gentleman named Elton Simpson, and authorities had been monitoring his phone conversations for quite some time. And in 2010, I think some 1,500 conversations had been monitored, and all he was accused of and convicted of was of lying to a federal official, an FBI official, but no terrorism charges were brought against him. And now here he perpetrates this act when it was well known that he and the other gentleman were both jihadist in their mindset. So, Gary, again, it speaks to the unwillingness on the part of the current administration to call Islamic terrorism what it is and then to deal with it thoroughly and decisively. If we don't change our approach, if we don't have a more aggressive, unequivocal approach to dealing with this threat, then we're going to see a lot more of this, unfortunately.
Sam, do you know, up to this point, has our president, Barack Obama, made a statement at all now that ISIS is claiming responsibility for this attack in Texas? Has he said anything that you know of?
Gary, at this point, I have not seen anything. Now, that's not a surprise to us, because we talk about a lot in this program that the president has been absent from the identifying of any of these actions, be it previous ones in this country or items overseas. He's been very, very, very reluctant to refer to it as an Islamic attack. He won't call the terrorists what they really are or identify why they are doing what they're doing. So to me, this is a very, very concerning matter. And I think we're seeing this thing come forth. See, one thing that Dave mentioned here, this individual's 1,500 hours worth of surveillance. Mm. I can assure you that he's not the only one that has been monitored with upwards of hundreds and hundreds of hours of surveillance. Matter of fact, we live in a surveillance society. Even the good folks are being monitored in our society. So it's not that these folks are not known. I would say they are known. But unless you have the right definition of justice and the right definition of the enforcement of our American law, rather than think that all law is equal for some reason, these kinds of things are we're just breeding a laboratory of rats that are going to jump out and bite people at inopportune times. I mean, that's why Dave, I think, said exactly correct. This is a matter of what is the role of government? What is the role of those who are there? And are they doing it? And right now, they are not protecting the security of the American people because they are not identifying the true threats to freedom and liberty as we know it, and they're not enforcing many cases the law as already on the book. So this is a matter of talking about prayer on Thursday. This is a matter of prayer for God's people.
Well, that's absolutely correct. I mean, you know, National Day of Prayer is coming up Thursday, and we talked about how important it is to pray for our nation, specifically for the upcoming 2016 presidential election. But this situation now with ISIS and, you know, the whole concept of Islamic thought being perpetrated here in the United States of America without too much of a response from our current Obama administration, this is very, very serious and something that we really do need to be praying for. I thought it was quite interesting that these two individuals who put on this attack down in Texas on Sunday wore bulletproof vests. I kind of thought that if they were really serious about what they were doing, they wouldn't mind having their life taken, Dave. Why wear bulletproof vests?
Well, Gary, I have no doubt that part of the reason they wore those vests is they wanted to kill as many people as they possibly could, and if they could sustain their lives perhaps for a little longer without being taken down, and those vests would facilitate that. That could be the reason they wore them. But the point you're making, I think, is one that needs to be made, and that is this. These folks that are these radical jihadist terrorists believe that it ensures their entrance into heaven if they die in the cause of the jihad. So they ought to be willing to die. But the fact of the matter is, my personal opinion is, I believe they wanted to get as far as they could, kill as many as they could before they gave their life in the jihad. And that perhaps would explain why they wore the bulletproof vest.
Well, from what we have learned, it appears as though they were on the radar because the House Homeland Security Committee Chairman Michael McCaul of Texas basically said that in the days leading up to the attack, a joint FBI and Homeland Security bulletin was circulated, and security for the event had been ramped up as a result of the fact that they understood that Garland, Texas, was going to be a target. So, you know, it's good that we do know that, at least in this case, the Homeland Security was successful. I think that they've allowed certain things to fall through their hands up to this point from time to time. But they were successful in this one. But the reality of it is, ISIS is not a junior varsity organization, as our president claimed they were here a year or so ago. They are real, they are strong, and we must heed the warning that Islam is on the march in the United States of America. We've got to prepare for it. We've got to defend ourselves, both governmentally and spiritually. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us today. Until tomorrow, on behalf of Dave Kistler and Sam Rohr, I'm Gary Dahl saying, stand in the gap for faith and freedom. Keep looking up, for the best truly is yet to come. God bless you all.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.